thousands of others around the country, is suffering from a dread disease called nuclearosis. The symptoms? Nuclear blindness. All he can see is a mushroom cloud. He is blinded from the fear of it, deaf from the sound of it. There is a short circuit in his brain. He can only think of the awfulness of the nuclear bomb. A fallout shelter in your basement will give adequate shielding from radioactive fallout. Ah, he's finally getting the message. Are you?
Hey shortwave fans, and welcome to episode 4 of the UVB76 and Number Stations podcast. I'm Web Weasel, your host, and as always, joined by my comrades Danix.
Hello, people.
And presented in 4D.
Hi, everybody, welcome back.
Happy New Year to you all, this being the first episode of 2011. We've all been very busy over Christmas and the holiday break. UVB's been active and interesting, as always, and there's been a few things going on around UVB itself, so we've got a lot to tell you about this episode. Coming up, we have coverage of UVB over the last few weeks. Danix has some interesting bits from history of the pit. Triangulation and position of the site of UVB and dealing with the magnetic loop antenna. LADE's SDR project, which is particularly interesting. Our shortwave diaries, since we've all been surfing around, we've decided to add a section of what we've been finding on shortwave. So let's kick off with our roundup and discussion of UVB activity from Christmas into the new year. Presented, would you like to take that up for us?
Yes. On December 21st, we had a message. Some 22nd, we have a message. 24th, we've had a message. 25th, one message. 26th, one message. 27th, we've had two messages. 28th, one. 29th, one. 30th, one. No New Year's message or anything. Our first return was on January 5th, which we had two. Most recently, January 11th, which we had one. On December 21st, there were numerous occasions that there were data bursts behind the buzzer. For a few minutes, buzzer stopped, indicates that the bursts were coming, in fact, from UVB-76. And the 25th, after stoppages, there were background noises hearable instead of the buzzer.
Okay, so in general, we just had a set of regular series messages all the way through to the end of this December, didn't we, guys?
Yep. Through the end of December, with regular messages, we've had problems with the buzzer other than stoppages. On the 5th, 25th, and the 30th. Olga was sick on the 29th. She talks way too much. She probably needs water or something. No, nothing on the 1st. We were very disappointed that there was no New Year message.
Yeah. Danix, do you want to tell us about your New Year's message?
That message died. And there's a bear. That's how it should be read. 35th, 37, New Year, 2011.
Mm-hmm. Which we're going to play for you now, of course. So that was our special New Year's Eve message from the UVB, because we were so disappointed they didn't send one for us. So we were really worried New Year's Eve, and the few 5 days afterwards, up until we actually got the message on January the 5th, because, well, this is what UVB's done in the past. It's had a brief burst of activity over a short period, and then it's gone silent for years. So no new messages for 5 days. We were all pretty jumpy.
Well, what I'm guessing is it was more maintenance-related, sense of change of the buzzer, probably mechanical problems with transmitters. You never know.
Because January the 5th, back comes UVB.
Михаил, Дмитрий, Женя, Борис. Михаил, Дмитрий, Женя, Борис. 79-612. Семен, Константин, Ольга, Павел, Леонид, Елена, Николай, Иван, Елена. 15-81-75-54. Михаил, Дмитрий, Женя, Борис. Михаил, Дмитрий, Женя, Борис. 79-612. Семен, Константин, Ольга, Павел, Леонид, Елена, Николай, Иван, Елена. 15-81-75-54. Михаил, Дмитрий, Женя, Борис. Михаил, Дмитрий, Женя, Борис. 26-739. Иван, Константин, Ольга, Николай, Ольга, Михаил, Елена, Татьяна, Роман. 65-71-18-45. Михаил, Дмитрий, Женя, Борис. Михаил, Дмитрий, Женя, Борис. 26-739. Иван, Константин, Ольга, Николай, Ольга, Михаил, Елена, Татьяна, Роман. 65-71-18-45.
The station has remained quiet until January 11th when we had another... one on the 14th, but as of recording, nothing new.
Yep, so been absolutely quiet since the 14th. We've had nothing out of UVB. Danix, duplicates. Do you want to tell us about the last few duplicates we've had?
Last duplicate we had was on December 28, 2010, with site 69922. Aerography. Aerography. It's duplicated message from September 2, 2010. It had a UVB 76 call sign.
Interesting. That was I didn't realize it was a UVB 76 dupe rather than MDZHB dupe. Very interesting. Sort of the last few weeks of December, we were still getting duplicate, but there did seem to me to be a lot of new words coming in that we hadn't heard before, as if the set had maybe been expanded. We definitely had a lot more repeats and duplicates earlier in the year, between August, September, and October, definitely. Okay, presented. Buzzer Oddities next.
Yep. As usual, we have seen multiple Buzzer Oddities. It's nothing new, really. We would really like to thank Tom41 and Scan Sweden from the forum and RIC for their hard work in documenting all of these oddities. First we have an early morning data signal. It could easily be related to a Geiger counter.
Well, that's what it's been nicknamed on the IRC.
Yeah.
As you'll hear for the sample we'll play now. And we have to give shout-outs to iTales for putting that on the forum first. And again to Danix as well for noting that this has been going on since at least August when this particular sample was first heard. but I've noticed it's been particularly regular for the last 5 weeks or so. If you listen between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. UTC, you will more than likely hear this signal played over the top of UVB. What's also particularly notable about it is it doesn't seem to stay on its broadcast carrier statically like it should. It jumps around all over the shop. So as you hear it, you will hear it's moving its carrier moving up and down, and you'll hear the tone of the rapid clicking change from a very Geiger counter-like clicking noise to a much more steady electronic beeping noise, depending on where it is. There's some interesting screenshots been posted on the forum and a couple of other places online of spectrums of this activity, and yeah, it's definitely jumping around all over the place. Have a look, they're really fascinating pictures.
This data mode, I'm just speaking from experience here, it sounds just like a simple FSK data burst. It doesn't carry a lot of traffic, just by the sound of it, doesn't seem like it's that high of a baud, so it really probably is really slow data mode for small bits of information, if anything.
Okay, for the uninitiated, what does FSK stand for?
That would be frequency shift keying. If you listen to something called a radio teletype, that's a perfect example.
Right, got yeah. That's the one where you have the two frequencies, or one's the base frequency, and one's set a certain amount of kilohertz ahead, say 200 or 400.
Right.
And it's indicated as like a binary signal. So it's
exactly. That's exactly what it is. High frequency is 1, and a low frequency is a 0. Is exactly what it is.
So when you see it on waterfall, what you should see is basically the equivalent of two steady lines, but it jumping between the two and the waterfall. If you're watching in WinRAD HD, for example. All through end of December, as usual, all we heard for the last few days were PBX telephone style tones, wasn't it, guys?
Extremely similar.
Yep. Background conversations. As we mentioned in the last podcast, there's been a few telephone conversations that have escaped onto UVB and been broadcast live. This has become quite a regular occurrence through the end of December. We heard a couple of messages broadcast over the telephone without the MDZHB call sign, and then actually broadcast over MDZHB beforehand. So, again, more credence to the theory that the broadcast tower for UVB is plugged into a big telephone exchange that routes all kinds of communications, and it's entirely possible for the telephone lines to be routed through the broadcast accidentally, and it's been happening a lot. We'll play you one of the examples now. And on particularly from the 26th to the 27th were some very notable instances. Just before the live broadcast on the 26th, at 1450 UTC, the buzzer went absolutely nuts. It'd been off since midnight of the 25th. And then 1450 UTC 26th, it returns, and there's six carriers shown on the waterfall. Again, there's screenshots of this posted in the forums. Go have a look.
It's the most amazing sound you'll ever hear.
Yep.
Unfortunately, I don't think we have any recordings of it, but it is
We should do. I shall dig through the archive after we finish recording and have a look and insert it now, because I should be able to find that. Either way, six carriers, phone call tones, phone calls themselves being broadcast. This continued all the way through to the morning of the 27th. Through the last days of December, the stream was very weak during message time, and we were lucky that Scan Sweden managed to catch the one on the 27th, as the stream had faded completely and Lade's SDR was completely unable to receive the transmission from the 27th. So thank you very much, Scan Sweden, for being out there and having the opportunity to record it for us. Okay, presented, you know what the flamethrowers are, or as we call them on the IRC, the flamethrowers. They appear to be random static data, just a big wide burst sitting on top of UVB, or just next to it if you look on the waterfall, and sounds very much like a flamethrower kind of noise when you're listening to it.
Yes.
But you know what it is, don't you, Frank, presented?
This in multiple places is called the flamethrower, but it's actually a NATO standard agreement mode. It's a very, very, very high bowed mode. You can transmit entire piece of paper that's about 11 by 8 inches in 3 seconds. It's that much data flowing through it. Typically when you're hearing it, it is simply an idle tone, just marking the frequency. It's all over shortwave. But considering that this is Russia, there are multiple forms of it that are scattered around. A few of us have been theorizing that this is based off of Stanag, as it's not exactly like the Stanags that we know.
Because Stanag's what this is called, right? Stanag is the name.
Stanag 4285, I believe. It's a random number, because Stanag can be anything with NATO. Mm-hmm. It's just standard agreement which NATO uses, such as cartridges for guns and magazines and whatnot.
Okay, but so everyone who's hearing it and seeing it on the stream and on the waterfall, that's what it is. It's NATO Stanag. It's not a blocker, it's not a jammer, and it's probably not being played deliberately over the UVB frequency on purpose in order to disrupt UVB. It's simply not connected with it, more than likely.
Do remember that this is 4 megahertz, and within 4 megahertz is a huge military channel. If you listen to 4 megahertz, you're bound to find something weird. 4 and 8 megahertz. If you're a shortwave listener and you're new to it, look for those if you want to find odd signals.
Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on. Ewok posted something on the forum that's rather interesting. We've all noticed the intense crackles that happen on the UVB stream. They're very, very common and happen a lot. Now, my view has always been that this is down to some sort of loose cable or bad connection somewhere, as it sounds very much like when you're plugging in your guitar into your amplifier, if you ever play electric guitar, and the kind of distortions you plug in. However, Ewok says the mic clicks have an echo sound sort of like those heard during long transmissions from the US spacecraft back in the 1970s. In those days, the clicks were said to have been artifacts of the analog relay network, as the transmissions traversed both the NASA comm system and television networks. Reasonably assuming that UVB transmitter site is plugged into either the Russian public switch telephone system or military equipment, it makes sense we might be hearing the same kind of thing, especially if they're true if they're using military hardened analog system. Okay, so what he's saying there is that the mic clicks that we've been hearing have been heard on analog broadcast systems used by NASA in the past, and that it's entirely possible that the military phone system, as he says, probably a hardened secure system that's used by the UVB and NDZHB systems, has this same analog issue, and that would be as the switching works, and that would be what we're hearing echoed over the system. Okay, Danix, on the date's not marked here. I must have removed it accidentally. The day that Yuri was used for the first time,
December 30th, I believe.
Yes, correct.
Yes.
There was phone call tones heard then, and you managed to translate some of it, didn't you, Danix?
For me, it's something like torpedo priam. Torpedo might be some comment, and priam man over and reception.
Okay, so this time some of the voice that bled through in these messages was actually audible. FRA dropped onto the IRC. We haven't seen him much, but he's been around on and off the last few months. And he'd managed to demodulate the deep voice military bleed that we spoke about in the last episode of the podcast. Now, many of you listening to the stream will come on the IRC and shout out, "There's voice on the stream," when actually it's this channel in the background. This channel's not tuned directly onto UVB signal, so it's slightly distorted when you hear it across either the upper sideband or the AM feed. But if you run it through the right kind of software where you can frequency shift what you hear, you can de-scramble it so it's actually audible. So we're going to play you that sample now.
December 7th,
Trojan from the IRC, Trojan, translated this as, well, it's a string of numbers. It starts off 1008707A77 blah, 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 blah. You don't want to hear it, but it's repeated three times, and each time ends 805 Prion, Prion being over a reception report. And it's interesting that, yes, it is what we suspected it. It's a quite likely to be a military communication of some kind. Right, do you want to take it from here, presented? Whole interruption.
Sure. This has happened a few times. This is probably the second time, but Olga has been interrupted in her message on January 5th. Buzzer was off at January 10th from 820 UTC to 500 on the 11th UTC. The buzzer that returns is very different. And here's the before and after of what the buzzer sounds like. Buzz. Buzz.
Okay, guys, what's your opinion on that? Why is the buzzer so different?
Could be a few things. As I've discussed in the IRC before, it could potentially be a data signal. I've always thought that the buzzer was a data signal, and the pure phasing sound of this is legitimately different. As I've shown in waterfalls or spectrograms before, it really has a large phasing amount in the lower frequencies, but judging by this, is a very low tone. But it could be analog. As you have said before, it could be a piece of circuitry.
Yeah, that's the feeling I have to put across to what I've expressed on the IRC. To me, the buzzer sounds like a piece of 1970s technology. It doesn't sound digital. Even though I know it's got that very rasping tone that sounds like on, off, on, off, on, off, it's not. I've got a feeling it's not got any microelectronics at all. So there's no transistors involved, or very few transistors involved in the generation of the buzz tone. It's probably a circuit consisting entirely of capacitors and diodes to produce a buzzing tone on a repeating pattern, which is very easy to do, and it's very basic electronics to set up. Now, my guess is what's caused the problem is they can't get bits to replace the buzzer anymore. So they keep soldering in new parts, new capacitors, new diodes, new resistors, whatever. And these parts are different from what was manufactured in the 1970s, but they're still repairing the original device. And that's why the buzz tone has changed steadily over time. As the quality and just the quality of the production of electronics has changed. The electronics that are available now are not the same as the electronics available in the 1970s, and I feel that the constant replacement of parts in the same device is what has led to the change of the buzzer over the years.
But here's the thing. If you've listened to the buzzer before the change, you would hear a distinct clicking noise at the beginning and at the end of the buzz, and that is gone now.
It's true.
Yes.
So that could easily mean more digital as compared to an analog signal, which would need to be physically turned on and off by a system, which clicks could have easily been heard.
Well, again, that could lend support to my theory as well, which is the electronics have changed, so the switching mechanism to switch the signal on and off has changed as well, hence why you don't hear the switching noise anymore.
So, what about you, Danix? Any idea from you?
for me buzzer changes because they change their equipment or their bang or something every stoppage. Maybe they need more sauce.
Right. Okay. That's basically UVB up until today, which is the 16th of January. There have been a lot of oddities in the last month. We've played you a few. It's pretty normal for UVB, or MDZHB, as Presenter keeps reminding me we should probably rename the podcast.
I have been told by people like Danix and others in the IRC that we should now refer to MDZHB, as it should properly be pronounced, as the ZH is actually a letter in Russian, Z.
Yeah. MDZB.
Now we should have a podcast sing-along about this.
Yay! Anyway, we've got the domain name, UVB76, for the podcast, so we're not changing it now. Tough. Okay, next up, Danix is going to tell us about the pip. Danix, would you like to take us through it?
Pip has since 80s, 90s, as far as I know. It broadcasts repeating about 63 times per minute pip sound. To about 2000-2001, it was faster. In late 90s, it broadcasted voice messages really regularly, sometimes every week, 2 weeks. So Enigma Group in 1999 designated it as S30. I remind that old designator before these messages was XD. But suddenly, around in late 2000, the station went silent, broadcasting just only pip. 2003, when next message was reported in Enigma 2000 group. In December 2006, pip has back to its activity. Then were reported 4-5 messages, next in 2007 and 2009. Current state, pip has since October 2010, when were broadcasted 2 messages with UVB76 format. After this, that station went well active. I myself called message on December 2, 2010. Did by young lady, really unclear. Next ones were December 28 and 29, did by old man, but unclear too. More clear message was on January 8 this year, 23:30 UTC. But I think that speaker should go to speech therapist, as it was unclear. I think that all these messages are related with MDZB. Maybe military districts are contacting with themselves. As far as we know, PIP belongs to Leningradsky military district.
Thank you very much, Danix. Okay, next up we have for you guys, triangulation. Now, if you don't know about it, click on your web browser right now and go to uvb-76.blogspot.com/p/triangulation.html. Here you will find the current entries that have been collected from over Europe, where people have made an attempt at making LADES directional antenna, or their own directional antenna, and getting a bearing on where UVB is being broadcast from right now. Before we get into having a look at the triangulation, I'm having a go at building the magnetic loop antenna myself, and it's a fascinating bit of construction, but I'm having real problems getting construction materials. I've got everything I need except for a suitable piece of pipe. I've had a look at getting copper pipe, but it's a nightmare to work with. You try bending a piece of quarter inch across copper pipe in a perfect circle, it's a nightmare. So I'm currently trying to find the same kind of PVC pipe that LADE used, which has an aluminium lining inside, therefore making it conductive and therefore making it a magnetic loop antenna, which is quite important. Now, the actual construction of this is very simple. You take your 3.3 meter long bit of pipe and you bend it into a circle, which with the PVC pipe isn't very difficult at all. You take about 15 meters or so of coax. You feed it through the pipe so it loops around and goes around 3 times in total. This will leave you with a loop with a piece of wire going through it that has 2 ends sticking out. Basically, with a little bit of soldering, a capacitor, you soldered the shield of one of the Karax to a solder lug to the pipe itself, with making sure that you filed down when you bolt through the pipe to put this connection on it enough so you actually get into the conductive aluminium layer. You then connect a capacitor into the setup to make the loop resonate at a very set frequency. This is exactly for UVB. You finish connecting this up, connect it to your radio. It needs to be used on a dipole connector because this is technically a dipole radio, a dipole antenna. And then you take it outside and use it to find your direction. Unfortunately, I have no idea how to use it to find the direction. Do you hold it vertically? Do you hold it horizontally? Do you get your signal from side on, straight on? I have no idea. And they didn't include instructions. So I'm going to get mine constructed over the next week. And if someone could let me know how to use it, I'd really, really, really grateful. Please send your emails in. Let me know. Okay, guys, what do you think of this new position? It looks like it's right in Estonia, doesn't it? Is that right?
It's right on the Russian-Estonian border, it looks. But with the lack of reception at night, I don't know. It's with we've got four things on the triangulation right now. So two from the Netherlands, or no, one from the Netherlands, one from Germany, one from Sweden, and one from Leyde in Estonia.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them form right at the Estonian border, and two others go up to St. Petersburg. Now, there's theories that UVB 76, or NDJB, is from St. Petersburg, which this backs it up, but with Leyde's triangulation, it goes right over the original location.
Very curious, isn't it?
So, two new transmission spots? Is there three? Never know.
Okay, the first things to be pointing out here, though, would be direction finding from a distance is difficult. The further away you are, the less accurate your direction finding is going to be. There's going to be more level of drift. Plus, there's, you know, you're standing with a compass looking at it in one hand while holding the aerial in another. There's even going to be error just by you looking down at the compass. So even though there's been quite broad sweeps put on the direction finding, I think they should be made wider to give a real perspective of just how inaccurate this is as a science. You add in stuff like propagation, skip zones, all that kind of stuff, and you begin to realise you need to be very, very close, or, well, not too close, because then you can't get it at all, of course, in order to actually properly do direction finding on a site like this. And it probably takes a bit more specialist equipment and a bit closer distance, and I mean proper high-tech, expensive equipment. But from what we've got, yeah, it does seem that UVB, or MDZHB, as we should call it, has moved. Leyde's bearing sits it roughly on the old site. None of the other bearings do at all, either pointing, crossing over just on the Estonian border, or much more closer to St. Petersburg. So very confusing. We knew it had moved. The pictures we've got from the site make it quite obvious that it was abandoned many, many years ago. Where it is now, it's a mystery. But Wikipedia is definitely out of date and needs some correction.
We're not going to get into that one. We are not getting into that.
That article should be deleted.
Yeah, it should be, yeah, frankly.
Just to give an update on that, we're going to get this article deleted, so our website is number one.
Yeah. Yay, we love Wikipedia.
Operation Nuke It From Orbit.
We're not WikiLeaks yet, guys. We're working on it, but we're not there yet. Okay, what have we got next? Leyde's SDR repeater. Okay, I've been looking into SDR. Now, I work as a systems administrator and a programmer for a large computing website, so I've got an interest in computing and technology in general. And now I've got an interest in radio, and, you know, logic is all how electronics works, so obviously the SDR is the next natural step. For everyone who doesn't know what SDR is, SDR stands for Software Defined Radio. Now, the goal of software-defined radio is to get your computer doing as much of the demodulation of the radio signal as possible, with as little electronics between you and the radio signal as possible. Now, Lade has mentioned that most of the SDRs that are available at the moment are based on early 90s technology, and that there's been a big progress in the availabilities of digital signal processing chips, DSP. And their price has dropped massively in the last 10 years. Most of the SDR projects that are available on the internet are quite out of date in regards to this, and they're still using 90s technology. So he's gone ahead and invented, or is in the process of creating, a new generation of SDR. Now, this is slightly separate from other projects that are out there. There are other projects working on this, but many of them use different technologies. One of the interesting ones is to use an FPGA. Now, an FPGA is a programmable logic chip. So, basically, it is a series of logic gates set out on a chip that can be programmed to be any kind of processor you want it to be, as long as there's enough logic gates available to make that kind of processor, theoretically, of course. So, that's a particularly interesting one because it's both electronics and software at the same time. A lovely mix. However, Lade's SDR is a little bit different. He's going for the goal of making it as cheap as possible, $150 or less, and to get the data straight out of the antenna and straight into the computer as quickly possible. So, to sum up his requirements here, it has to be fully digital with an ADC connected as close to the antenna as possible. It has to be possible to build on a two-layer circuit board, and if everything else falls apart, one should be able to build it using photoresist technology in his own kitchen. It should contain no BGA, ball grid array, footprint components. It sadly has two small LLP packages, which are rather difficult to put on board without a reflow oven, but as they have a small number of connections, but it's still doable with a soldering iron. So it is going to be a bit of a tricky job for any of the new solderers out there, anyone getting into SDR, but some of the online kits will do you well, as I'm about to find out. Anyway, to carry on, he's not using an FPGA for interfacing, which is common with the SDR projects, the new ones that are out there. It should be compatible with existing SDR software, and it should cost around $100. So, essentially, he's reached his goal, and he's putting together an SDR kit for us now. If he gets it working properly, he's probably going to have the PCB that's required for it designed and industrially manufactured, so we'll be able to buy the kit off him, or at least parts of it anyway. And we'll have a SDR project that's able to cover almost the full range of radio signals out there. So you'll get the equivalent of, say, a $10,000 radio for about 150 quid. This has got to be good. Either way, on SDRs, for those who are interested in this kind of thing, I've decided to plunge into the deep end, order an SDR kit, a nice cheap one, get myself a soldering iron and have a go. So, in the next couple of episodes, I'll be letting you know about my adventures of burning myself, getting smoke in my eyes, and destroying electronics through having no clue whatsoever about what I'm doing, as I learn to solder and learn to put together SDRs. Hopefully you will have some fantastic results, but either way, I'm probably going to have some great stories for you. So, SDR, way of the future for radio.
Now, if you had no idea what he just said, you are in good company.
Okay, shortwave notes next. Our shortwave diaries. Who wants to start?
Danix, would you like to start here?
Alright, don't worry about it then. Presented, would you like to tell us what you've been doing over shortwave the last few weeks?
Alright, I got myself, for Christmas, I got myself a brand new Grundig Satellite 750, and I love it. Here in the northeast United States, we have a N-beacon on 10126 kilohertz. I looked into this, and apparently this is an airport beacon for a small airport down in Tennessee. 4625, the buzzer is coming in beautifully every night. I've been picking up a few broadcast stations not intended for the United States. I've gotten Voice of America being broadcast over to communist nations in Asia, and that was coming in very nicely. I've gotten the BBC World Service, which The American show was canceled in 2008. I caught E10 the other day with a few other guys on here, very shortly, but I got it. My radar hunting continues. I love radar sounds. I've gotten XM Whales just the other day.
I had that one.
Very odd. 5550, I got a strange aeronautical station. I can't find the identity of that. 8880 is a aeronautical station for Gander Radio, Spanish maritime stuff on 8 MHz, and 6662 kHz is really odd data bursts.
Well, I've been having a lot of fun too. Just before the last episode, I managed to pick up a really good shortwave radio. And since then, me being the compulsive person I am, suddenly discovered making antennas as well. So I've been having a lot of fun. I've been running coax up and down my house, drilling through walls, planting ground rods, adding shielding. It's been a lot of fun. I've now got a 12-foot mast I set up in the garden just today, actually, with a 30-foot telephone wire attached to that that I'm using as my antenna, and a grounded shielded coax cable connecting it to the radio. So I'm getting fantastic signals on my set right now. I'm really, really enjoying it. Actually looking forward to putting in a new dipole I received recently and giving that a blast. I've just bought pulleys and various bits of equipment for drilling hooks and eyes to the house so I can mount it properly. I'm having a lot of fun. But since I've got into it, I've picked up stuff all over the world. I've picked up radio from America. It's really interesting to listen to the insane Christian stations they've got out there. The religious nutter stations are fantastic. There was one going on about how they were going to nuke Israel, and I'm pretty sure Israel are on their side, but whatever. Stuff from most of Europe, of course. I get plenty of French radio stations, Polish radio stations, German, lots of odd time signals, SSTV, loads of ham radios everywhere. For some reason I get a lot of French taxis where did I pick up that? On 3.75, I always get French taxis every night, which is amusing to listen to. Radar signals, I've got a couple of different sets of them out there. The PIP, the Squeaky Wheel, and UVB, I all pick up most of the day, except now during around noon when the sun's the highest. So I've got brilliant reception. I'm really enjoying having a shortwave radio and really getting into this world, and I can listen to the buzzer as well, which is absolutely fantastic. Okay, next up we have number stations. The number stations broadcast we prepared for the last episode. Congratulations to Trojan, Serafima, Jordan Hill, Keown, and the five or six others who got it. I've sent you all QSL cards in the post. Some of you got them already, I hear. Others, they're on their way. I hope they arrive soon. We had a few comments to say it was too quick to write down, and I've noted that, and I'll make sure that this episode's one's a little bit slower. A few people saying it was too difficult to crack, and I'm going to work on it to make it a bit easier for you guys. My view is, what I'm trying to get across here is how cryptography works, and plunging you in the deep end and just saying here's a code, figure it out, is probably not the best way to go about it. So these next few episodes, while I teach you the basics of cryptography, for those who are uninformed, I'm actually going to give you the encryption type, or at least a serious clue of how to work it out, before each broadcast. In last episode, it was actually just encoded in hexadecimal. So all you needed to do was type it into Notepad, copy and paste it into a hex-to-text translator, which you can use LeetKey as an add-on in Firefox, or go to Google and type in hex-to-text. And the first website you come across is an online site where you can just dump the hex code in one box, hit translate, and out comes the message. That was the solution for last episode. As I say, perhaps only 10 people in total got it. Pretty good, I thought, really, that we even got 10 replies and 10 people were interested in giving it a go, considering having to sit there and transcribe it in the first place. This episode, I'm going to start off with a basic Caesar cipher. This encoding technique is called a Caesar cipher. It's the most basic one we can possibly do, and it's the first place to start in all cryptography. It's called the Caesar cipher because it was apparently used by Roman troops in communication of messages between commanders. It's extremely basic. All it involves is shifting the alphabet.
Shh, don't give it away.
I gotta give it away.
No,
I gotta educate.
We'll do that next episode.
Alright. Google's your friend, Caesar Cipher. You'll figure it out. Here's the number stations bit.
Delta, Foxtrot, Delta, Group 22, Group 22, message, begin, Papa, Delta, Alpha, X-ray, Hotel, Whiskey, Yankee, Golf, Yankee, November, Kilo, Sierra, Yankee, Whiskey, Sierra, Oscar, Whiskey, Papa, India, Echo, Zulu, Juliet, Echo, Charlie, Delta, Papa, Papa, Kilo, Charlie, Alpha, Papa, Uniform, Kilo, Quebec, November, Mike, Oscar, Hotel, Yankee, Whiskey, November, Zulu, Oscar, Alpha, Juliet, Zulu, Papa, Delta, Whiskey, Papa, India, Alpha, Oscar, Whiskey, Charlie, Alpha, Papa, Kilo, Papa, Delta, Alpha, Lima, Kilo, Zulu, Yankee, Whiskey, Oscar, Papa, Alpha, India, Whiskey, Echo, Hotel, End of message. End of message.
I think that wraps it up for this episode. What do you guys think?
I believe that is everything we have.
Okay, so thank you very much for listening once again. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye, see you next time.
See you on the airwaves, shortwave fans. And that's a wrap.